So the question was asked about the 2-day Yom Tov. So let's review the history of the 2-day Yom Tov and then get to practical today. The Torah tells us that God gave us the first mitzvah to sanctify the month. And what that means is that the Torah gives us holidays that are defined by a calendar date, and that calendar is given into the hands of the sages. How so? We know that that calendar is lunar on the one hand, but with alterations to match the solar year, so that Pesach always falls out in the spring. The Muslims, for example, have a lunar calendar without those alterations, and therefore the Ramadan can sometimes fall out in the spring and in the summer and in the winter and in the autumn. It goes around the year because they don't have alterations to modify their calendar to match the solar calendar. So it just goes around the solar year, their calendar. But our calendar, we derive from the Torah, is supposed to have leap years, which introduce alterations into the calendar to modify it so that it will be consistent with the solar year, with the seasons. Now, the lunar month is approximately 29 and a half days. So how do you have 29 and a half days in a month? So the simple solution is that you have some months that are 29 days long, we have some months that are 30 days long, and that balances it. So let's say there's an even split. Let's say there are 6 months that are 29 days long, and there are 6 months that are 30 days long. So what we're going to end up with is a year that is 254 days long. 354 days long. Now that matches the lunar calendar. Your months are going to match the moon, but you understand that 354 days is a lot less than 365 days. So you're missing 11 days from each year. Each lunar year is 11 days shorter than the solar year, right? So far we're together. So for that we introduce approximately every 3 years, you lose 33 days. So approximately every 3 years we introduce an extra month, which we call Adar Beis. That makes up for 30 days out of the 33. And that's a short summary of our calendar. Now, how do you decide which month is going to have 29 days and which month is going to have 30 days? So, initially this was in the hands of the court. The high court decided when the month began. Is this month going to end after 29 days or after 30 days? How long is each month going to have? Now, they wanted witnesses to tell them when they saw the new moon, but in truth it was in their hands. Even if witnesses did not show up, they could decide whether or not this month would be a 29 day month or a 30 day month, which basically means that they could decide how the calendar works. They could also decide when to make it a leap year and introduce an extra month. So you understand, if Adar is coming up and you hit the 15th of Adar, 30 days later is supposed to be Pesach, and they decide it's going to be a leap year. So now they introduce another 30 days without Pesach, and Pesach ends up 30 days later. That's controlled by the High Court. So God gave the High Court the control of the calendar, be it with the decision of when to make a leap year. We have a tradition how we should make that decision, but ultimately they call the shots. And they also control which month is going to be 29 days long, which month is going to be 30 days long. And even if that does not really coincide with the lunar month, meaning, let's say according to the lunar calendar, this month should be 30 days long. We said each lunar month is 29 and a half months. Let's say the new moon is only going to be seen tomorrow night. They could decide, yeah, we're considering it as though the new moon was seen tonight and we're making this month 29 days long. They don't have to go by the witnesses. So the witnesses will say, but last night we saw the moon, the old moon. How could you make it that today is going to be Rosh Chodesh? That's our power. It's one of the powers vested in the High Court, that they could make the months the way they see fit. Now that being said, let's say I live a distance from the court. and I want to know when Rosh Hashanah is going to be. Rosh Hashanah falls out on Rosh Chodesh, the first of the month. Well, what will the High Court decide? Does the previous month have 29 days or 30 days? Which day is the first of the month of Tishrei? Right? This year it fell out on Shabbos. But was it really... was it going to be Shabbos or was it going to be Sunday? Which day is the first of the month? Will the month of Elul have 29 days or 30 days? So during the time of the courts, when we didn't have a set calendar, that was in the hands of the courts. I think he's expecting you to wait for him outside. I'm sorry. Sorry. You know what? So we'll wait. So what we have until now is that we have the lunar month being 29 and a half days. The High Court has control over which months are going to be 29 days long, which months are going to be 30 days long. And someone who's living distant from the High Court would have no way of knowing which month, on any given month, whether that month began on after 29 days or after 30 days. Did the previous month have 29 days or 30 days? Because that was in the High Court's control, and they could decide based on many factors to do whatever they want. And this brings about a situation where, let's say, the month of Adar is here. We know Purim is on a certain day, and we don't know if Pesach is going to be 30 days later or 29 days later, because we don't know if the month of Adar is going to have 29 days or 30 days. So if I live close to the courts, so I'll find out a day or two after Rosh Chodesh on which day was the first of the month. How many days did the previous month have? But if I live further away, so then then I can't know. Now this isn't really dependent on Eretz Yisrael or Chutz La'aretz, but rather it is dependent on the geographic distance between where one is situated and where the High Court was. Meaning on Rosh Hashanah, let's say the High Court was situated in Jerusalem, the people up in Tzfat had no way of knowing which day was Rosh Hashanah, even though they were in Israel. But this safek, this doubt, is not as bad as it sounds, because almost always we knew how many days the month would have. So it's a safek on the one hand, but it's not a very big safek. We do have a rov, we have a majority that we could go by. We could say most months of Adar have 29 days. Most months of Elul have 29 days. We could say we have a rov, we have a majority, and go by that, like we do on many things in the Torah, that we say you go by the majority. But nonetheless, there was a rabbinic institution that said that anyone who is distant from the Beis Din must treat this safek, this doubt, as a strong safek, and must celebrate the Yom Tov on 2 days out of doubt. And this institution, some say, goes back to Yoshua bin Nun. And when Yoshua was leading the Jewish people, the tribes that went to the eastern side of the Jordan, when we conquered the land of Israel, so they entered the land of Israel to help us with our war. And when we finished the war, they went back to their hometown, to the eastern side of the Jordan. And when they were about to depart, one opinion says, Yoshua told them, okay, but I want you to know that you guys will never know on which day the holiday is, because you won't know how many days any given month had, and you'll always have a doubt of one day, and therefore you will have to keep the holidays as 2 days, 2 day holidays. And be it in Yeshua's time or in a different time, our sages instituted this concept of Yom Tov Sheni, a second day Yom Tov, which is what we call Yom Tov Sheni of Galuyot. Now, this Yom Tov Sheni is only relevant distant from where the High Court is located. They reached a point where we had Hillel, not Hillel Azaki, not the famous Hillel, who was a Tana who lived before the generation of the destruction of the temple, but rather a Hillel who was an Amora, who lived very, very late. And in order to differentiate, we call him Hillel Nisiya. And he instituted the calendar that we have today. He instituted formulas that, with those formulas, we know in advance how many days each month is going to have.
When you're saying Tzfat, they had to celebrate 2 days?
Rosh Hashanah, yeah. In Tzfat, they had to celebrate 2 days Rosh Hashanah. By Pesach, they knew. But by Pesach, they also known Chutzlaretz in many locations. In Egypt, they could know within 15 days when Rosh Chodesh was. So, our sages instituted a two-day Yom Tov. And when they instituted the calendar that we still have today, so they asked, should we still keep this two-day Yom Tov? And they said, yes. Keep it as a minhag. And they instituted a minhag of keeping a second day Yom Tov. Up until now, we're all together. Yeah? Okay. Now the question is, this two-day Yom Tov doesn't really derive from any safek. We know on which day the Yom Tov is, be it if we're in Israel or in Chutz Laretz. But our sages instituted a minhag. They said, maintain the minhag of keeping a two-day Yom Tov in Chutz Laretz. For whatever reason, that was their institution. We know that when it comes to minhagim, every community has its own minhagim. The Gemara already says that different communities have different minhagim. And when one lives with a community, one is supposed to adopt the minhagim of that community. When one moves from one community to another community, then one stops keeping the minhagim of the former community and adopts the minhagim of the community he has moved into. That's the way it works with minhagim. What happens when one lives in Chutz Laretz, where they keep 2 days Yom Tov, they have that minhag, and he comes to the land of Israel for a visit? So when you visit a place, you don't keep the minhagim of that place. Just because you visited a certain country or a certain community doesn't mean you adopt their minhagim. You might not overtly go against their minhagim. You don't want to get into arguments. But that doesn't mean that their minhagim become your minhagim. Only when you move there, when you become a permanent resident of that community, do you adopt that community's minhagim. So when one would leave Chutz Laretz and come to the land of Israel, it would seem that so long as his coming is a visit, so then he would still have to maintain the minhag of a two-day Yom Tov. On the surface, so far, that's what it would seem like. So then, we're going to continue with this. Later on, we'll bring an opinion that shatters everything we just said. But for now, we're going to continue with this understanding, because this is the generally accepted understanding. So then the whole question revolves around, when is one considered having switched communities? The question is, when are you considered a member of the communities in Israel that you could say, I take the minhagim of the communities of Israel and I don't have to keep a two-day Yom Tov? So here there are differing opinions. Some say that until you get married, until you have a family here, you're considered a resident of the community where you came from. You have nothing binding you to this country. You say, I moved here. What do you mean you moved here? You just as soon pack your bags and move back if you needed to or if you thought you should. You didn't really move here. You're not considered living here with permanence until you have a family here. This is a very strong halachic opinion. And that halachic opinion maintains that Jews that come from Israel to the land of Israel must continue keeping their two-day Yom Tov just as they would in Chutz Laretz. This happens to be the prevalent opinion in Chutz Laretz. The rabbis in Israel don't go with this opinion. Many of the rabbis in Israel say, once you come here, some say, let's say you were offered a shidduch. You were offered to marry a girl here. And that girl says, I want to live here. And you say, okay. So then there are those that say, that is enough to show that you have left the community you came from. You're open to living here, so that's enough. From that point on, you no longer have to fully keep the two-day Yom Tov. What do you have to keep? So here again, there are differing opinions. There are those rabbis that say, once you're here for a year, once you're here long term, you want to make aliyah. Once you're here with the potential for aliyah, some say, you don't keep anything. You don't keep a second-day Yom Tov. There are those that say you should keep the biblical aspects of the second-day Yom Tov, which means don't turn on a fire. Turn on a light. Don't tear something. Don't write. But could you go on a bus and have someone else pay for you? Yeah. Could you go in a car and have someone else open the door and close the door? Yeah. There is that opinion. That's Rav Avram Shapiro's opinion. He says that I think all of you guys should keep the second day Yom Tov only in as much as the biblical prohibitions. But you could do a lot of things that would be rabbinic prohibitions, and on any other Yom Tov you wouldn't do, but the second day Yom Tov in the land of Israel you could do it. And this
so
ruling,
the second day we'll go around and touch pencils.
Okay. And this opinion is based very strongly on another point, which is what I said will shatter everything we built until now. Not everything, but a lot of what we built until now. But until here, are we clear? So we said, there's the opinion that says you have to keep the 2-day Yom Tov, you don't live here till you're married here, till you have a family here. That seems to be the prevailing opinion with rabbis in Chutz Laretz. In the land of Israel, so there are different opinions as to how lenient you could be, but they are much more lenient. They say either if you'd be willing to stay here, if you want to stay here, if you plan on staying here, different opinions as to how connected you have to be to the land of Israel, but they all are far more lenient. Many of the rabbis are far more lenient as far as the second day Yom Tov in the land of Israel. And now here comes the bombshell. There was a great rabbi called who compiled a responsa called the Chacham Tzvi, and he was the father of Rav Yaakov Emdin, the Yaivitz. Now he wrote the following responsa. He said, in the time of the temple, let's say a person lived out in Turkey, so he was always keeping 2 days Yom Tov. And then he decides on Pesach he wants to visit the land of Israel. So he takes his family and he makes the long journey to visit. He's coming just for the holiday of Passover. And he enters the temple. And now when he's in Jerusalem, he knows which day is the first day Yom Tov, which day is the second day. No one, he says, would say that he has to maintain that custom in the land of Israel. Why? Because during the period of the temple, no one in the state of Israel is keeping a 2-day Yom Tov. During the period of the temple, you came to the state of Israel, you know which day is Yom Tov, you don't have to keep a 2-day Yom Tov. There's no... you see what the court's doing. So you know. So the Chacham Tzvi says that the minhag today that we maintain in Chutz Laretz is no stronger than the minhag during the period of the temple. What are we saying? Maintain the minhag that was going on then. Well, in that time, if a Jew would visit the land of Israel, he would not keep a 2-day Yom Tov. Therefore, says the Chacham Tzvi, even today, even if you're just visiting the land of Israel, you're here just for a day, just for Shavuos. You flew in for Shavuos, you're going to fly out after Shavuos. Says the Chacham Tzvi, you don't have to keep 2-day Yom Tov. It has nothing to do with any permanence. This is a totally different point. And that's why the Chacham Tzvi shatters everything that we said until now. He says, true, with other minhagim we say, the maintaining of that minhag is contingent about where are you, is contingent on which community are you a resident of. But this is different, this minhag. Now, why is this opinion so important? Because it seems that the minhag of Jerusalem, the minhag that was instituted by Rav Salant, who was chief rabbi of Jerusalem, was that people who come from Chutz Laretz to Israel do not keep a 2-day Yom Tov. He adopted this opinion of the Chacham Tzvi. And that is one of the reasons why rabbis who know of this tradition in Jerusalem are going to be far more lenient. Because they say, hey, the minhag, the custom in Jerusalem is that you don't keep a 2-day Yom Tov. This is what was instituted by the chief rabbi of Jerusalem almost 100 years ago. So even then people didn't fly in, but they came to visit. So 60, 70 years ago, this was instituted as the custom in Jerusalem, and no one should change that. So that is why Rabbi Avram Shapiro, for example, is far more lenient. They say that during Rav Kook's time, tourists started coming, and the hotel industry are those that push this 2-day Yom Tov because they make more money on it. So when the hotels first wanted to have a 2-day Yom Tov, they came to Rav Kook. This is what they say. I don't know that it's written anywhere, but this is what I've heard. They came to Rav Kook and they said, we want your authorization to make a 2-day Yom Tov. It'll bring a lot of money into the country. We'll get tourists to stay an extra day. We want your authorization to do this. So they wanted to make a Seder, a second Seder, right? Pesach night. They wanted to make a 2-day Yom Tov of the first night of Pesach and to make a Seder. And they say that Rav Kook didn't want to let them do it, but they pushed and they pushed and they begged and they begged. And finally Rav Kook said, okay, you can make a 2-day Yom Tov on the condition that you have a band playing at the Seder the second night. Because if you have a band playing, that shows no one makes a Seder with a band. That doesn't exist. Nowhere in the world does anyone have a Seder with a band. If you have a band playing, that shows that you really respect the custom of Jerusalem, that really you don't really have to make a Seder, but that you're just doing it like to make these people happy and to boost your business. It's known that there were Rebbes that were very upset that their Hasidim walked around when everyone else was having a weekday. They walk around dressed like Yom Tiv, and they say good Yom Tiv, and they don't hide the fact that they are from Chutz Laretz. And some rabbis said that's disrespectful to the land of Israel. You come to the land of Israel and you're taking pride in the fact that you're from Chutz Laretz, you're keeping 2 day Yom Tov. Be embarrassed about it. You're not from here, you're not planning on staying here, how aren't you embarrassed? So you keep it 2 day Yom Tov, okay, but at least keep it modestly. And this story about Rav Kook I have a hard time believing, because allowing them to make a second Seder means allowing them to make many blessings that would be in vain. A blessing on the matzah, how could he let them do that? What does business have to do with it? So I don't know if the story is true. If it's true, then we're missing some facts, because halachically I don't see how it works. They say that the Chazon Ish, when people ask them this question, would say, so you're telling me that you plan on sinning after Yom Tov? You plan on leaving this holy land after Yom Tov? I don't believe you that you're going to sin. You're telling me you're going to do something that's so terrible after Yom Tov, you're going to leave this holy land that you're not supposed to leave? I don't believe you. You keep 1 day. You believe it. You think you're going to leave here after Yom Tov. You have a problem that you believe you're going to do something so terrible after Yom Tov. I don't believe you, so I'm telling you to keep 1 day. Again, I don't know that this is written anywhere. I don't know that this is true. I would definitely not rely on hearsay halachically. But it is interesting, at least philosophically, that this is what they quote the Chazon Ish as having said. Halachically, I would not rely on this. This is hearsay. Okay? And halachically, I recommend you don't ask me, because my tradition, coming from Chutz Laretz and having learned by the rabbis in Chutz Laretz, is the stringent tradition. Anyone that will ask me, I try not to answer, because if I answer, then my answer would be, you have to keep 2 days Yom Tov. Unless you're married here with a family, my tradition is you keep 2 days Yom Tov. That's what my rabbis ruled. But I also learned by Rabbi Shapiro, and that's not what he rules, but he wasn't my primary teacher, so that's not what I would tell you.
So when someone's married with kids, then
not with kids, married.
Married. So someone does all the others, makes some difference?
That's the tradition I have, correct.
Really?
Now, it could be that there's a difference for someone who did tshuva, because that's someone who changed his life drastically. And he didn't keep anything beforehand. And it could be that there we would say a little bit differently, because he never had the custom of Chutz Laretz. He didn't keep anything of Chutz Laretz. I never researched that enough. Could be that someone who did tshuva in the land of Israel and saying, I'm going to stay here, I'm going to live here, has a lot more to rely on.
But then again, there's another rabbi that says that just because you're here, you should keep this tradition.
But if a person did tshuva here, he doesn't have any tradition.
No, what I'm saying is that, like, so you believe that there are still opinions that say that only 1 day tshuva.
Correct.
So 100%. Right,
100%. 100%. And you should know that my stringency is also a leniency. Because if I say keep a 2 day Yom Tov, that means that the day after Sukkot in the state of Israel, when everyone else is donning tefillin, my tradition says you don't don tefillin, which is problematic. I'm saying you should do Kiddush the night afterwards, saying God's name, which according to the other traditions is saying God's name in vain. And as usual, I always say here in the Machon that people shouldn't jump too high too fast, being that there are respectable, reliable rabbis who are more lenient here. I recommend you don't ask me and you go with the more lenient opinions, but verify who they are. Don't go by hearsay. Speak to Rav Listman, speak to Rav Goldenberg. Rav Goldenberg will be very happy to be lenient for whoever wants to speak to whichever Rav you feel comfortable with. I believe that here in the Mahon, we don't have to start with the... If there's room to be more lenient, then that's where we have to start. You guys know I say that all the time. So for our listeners who are Mahon-oriented, so that's what I would say. Our listeners who are not Mahon-oriented, then I've said what I think. Not what I think, what my tradition is. Okay? Clear? Okay.